Hey, this is Wesley from the Atheist Nomads podcast, and you're listening to Inciting Incident because if you don't, we'll kill the firstborn male child of every household in Rockridge. Wait, too Jewish?
It's Friday, and it's 7 p.m., which means it's time for the Inciting Incident podcast, supported by our patrons and available on Libsyn, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, LiveJournal, Google Plus, The Hard Harry Show, News Radio, WHP 580, Rock and Emily's Bed Radios that are somehow appropriate for children that age, Most Tin Cans Connected with String, Tumblr, Snapchat, Zanga, LimeWire, WinMX, Napster. We'll have to spell it with two Y's there to escape Big Brother. The DCI, the Enchantment Under the Sea Dance, the Plate and Pete and Pete's Mother's Head, and any other podcast app that somehow escaped this list. And now, here's your host, Al Lehman.
Good evening and happy Friday. This is Al Lehman with Inciting Incident. I'm doing it solo today, except I'm not really because I have two guests with me. We have one of their atheist nomads on the podcast before. You may remember Wesley, but joining me today, we have Dustin and Lauren. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having us.
Hello.
Hello. And of course, we had Wesley perform one of our favorite audio stingers, so hopefully you can send one that's more outrageous and offensive than his was, so we'll get to that after the show. So,
okay.
Our listeners are familiar with the Atheist Nomads, as, like I said, we have Wesley on, but we may not be familiar with you guys, so why don't you both introduce yourselves and give us a little bit of your background and how you got into podcasting.
Okay.
I'll start. Since I'm not the famous one. my name's Lauren. I was raised a Unitarian Universalist, so basically atheist, with Sunday with Sunday learning programs. It's a good way to raise a kid, that's for sure. Got to hear a bunch of cool stories that most kids don't get to hear, as well as being able to ignore those that I didn't want to listen to. So. Goodness all around there.
Absolutely. And for those who may not know what the Unitarians are, they're not exactly prevalent around here. Can you elaborate on what that's like?
Oh, Unitarian Universalism goes back way, way back, but we have a famous president, John Adams. He was a Unitarian Universalist. Basically, it's an open platform where anybody of any religion can come join. The congregations are usually made up of about 40% atheists and 60%, everybody else. Everything from pagans to Hindu to Buddhist to Christian. Of course, naturally here we have a lot of Christian, not only Christian, but no Bible thumpers, no jihadists. It's all pretty chill. Everybody's just there for the coffee and cake.
Fantastic. So sorry to cut you off there.
Please no, that's okay. I was born and raised in Idaho. I have never left the state. I've always lived within 50 miles of the Snake River in the Snake River Valley from Boise, Meridian to Idaho Falls, which is very conservative, very Mormon, quite suffocating in high school, especially. But Boise's a little better. Boise's a little blue spot in the red state. So it's nice to be back in Boise and living where the politics, you might actually have a chance of making a difference. Very slight chance emphasized there. I flunked college because math is hard, but I am endlessly curious, so I still love to learn. So I'm always learning about especially scientific stuff. I love it. I'm a fangirl.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. There are worse things to be a fangirl of. So,
I'm like all over the place too. I've got, you know, I've got fan of science. I'm a fan of comic books. I'm a fan of all sorts of stuff. I'm a nerd. It's awesome.
Well, then you're on the right show. That's for sure. Yes. My most recent ex-girlfriend was from Boise. So I can always recognize who is from Boise, by the fact that they use the S instead of the Z sound.
I was going to compliment you on your S. Like, oh, that's a mighty fine S you have in your Boise there. I know.
I'm going to add that to my resume.
Yes, can say Boise correctly.
Just don't put that on if you're trying to get into media, because every time you hear the news pronouncing it, they always throw in that Z.
They don't know.
They really don't. So I've had secondhand stories from Boise and what it's like there and outside the city. But I mentioned that when I was on the Atheist Nomads,
like
Everybody Welcome
outside
podcast.
The city. Yeah.
I don't blame you.
Just the Badlands.
I imagine it's quite similar to being outside of the Twin Cities in Minnesota, where it keeps going back more years the farther you get away, and you can always tell how close you are to the cities by the prevalence of the anti-abortion billboards.
Yeah, yeah. there's a lot of that. So luckily not so much here in the Treasure Valley. We're becoming quite metropolistic, but yeah, you know, it's a agricultural farming state, and it's always going to be more conservative because of that.
Absolutely. And I don't know your relationship with Dustin, so forgive me if this is a stupid question, but how do you know Dustin?
Dustin and I met at Idaho Atheists Meet an Atheist event that happens every month. And after a while, we started dating, and then we got married. And now we live happily with our two dogs in a tiny-ass little duplex and are looking to move to the Puget Sound together.
Yeah.
So I got dragged into podcasting because I wanted to spend more time with my husband.
Yeah.
So it works.
The first time she was on the show is because we hadn't had anybody with a Unitarian background on. So I thought that'd be an interesting angle, and also wanted to just get her on a microphone. And then we invited her back a few more times, and now she's a relatively regular part of the show.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, from the well, being a patron, I have heard your voice before, of course, because I became familiar with the show relatively recently. But I am a fan. Yay. And a patron, of course.
That's OK. It's only gotten better since I've been on. So,
you haven't well, that's obvious. Anything. I mean, you've got to balance out Wesley somehow.
Yes, you get a little bit of the old and the new.
All right, so how did you guys get hooked up with Wesley in the first place? Like, did you guys know each other in person, or did you meet at that convention as well?
So everybody I know in the Puget Sound right now that I would consider a friend, I didn't know when I lived in the Puget Sound. And Wesley's included in that.
I like to call it the Puget Sound.
And I was at a Northwest Freethought Alliance conference, and I'd just been a guest on Chariots of Iron a couple times. And I was outside talking to some people, and Wesley came up and joined the group, and he recognized my voice. So he got his first... He'd already started reading my blog by that point. I was blogging at the time.
He was a fanboy.
I got my first fan picture with Wesley. And then he thought something was wrong when my tone had changed a little bit on the blog, and he kept sending me these concerned messages, and then he started sending me stories I could write about, and I was eventually getting so fed up with it. I was like, all right, why don't you put these together into an article that I can just post? And he did, and then that continued a few times, and then I gave him full writing privileges on the site. And then when Chariots of Iron went on permanent hiatus, I decided it was time to start a podcast. And since I'd been writing with Wesley, I went ahead and asked him if he wanted to start the show. And so we did it.
And now they're hetero life mates.
No, it's the Jay and Silent Bob of atheist podcasting. I love it.
One of the many.
Indeed. So before Chariots of Iron, why don't you give us a little bit of your background and how you got to that point?
All right. Do you want the 45-second, 5-minute, or 1-hour version?
Let's go somewhere between the 5-minute and 1-hour version. Okay. Definitely want to get some detail in there, at least.
Okay. So my story, if we really want to get into how incredibly deeply religious it was, my great-great-grandparents lived in Nebraska in the 1880s. They'd immigrated from England. And a Seventh-day Adventist missionary showed up in their town, was asking around who's the most respected man in town. And they all told him John Clark. So he went over and knocked on the door of my great-great-grandparents on my mom's side and asked them if he could come in and talk to them. And after quite a bit of time, my grandparents or great-great-grandparents joined the Adventist church. And a little while later, he made a land deal with the with somebody who was out in Washington, where they swapped land. So he moved out to just outside of Portland in Battleground, Washington. And part of the deal he'd made with God was to give half of the land to start a school. And he did that. He took the 160 acres, he split it, logged it, sold off some of the trees to raise money to build this school, and use some of the trees to mill right there on the site and build up this structure, a school and a church. And he and his wife were the first two people who signed the charter for the Meadow Glade Seventh-day Adventist Church, which is the largest Adventist church in the Oregon Conference, even though it is in Washington. It's counted with Oregon.
So here's a guy who actually made a deal with God and actually went through with it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. If this land swap goes through, I promise I'll give you half.
So, you know, at the 100th anniversary celebration of the Meadow Glade Adventist Church's charter, and the village of Meadow Glade there was named by my great-great-grandma, they wanted a large delegation from the Clark family there, and I was one of the people who went and ended up sitting next to the conference vice president. So, and the conference, think of it in terms, if you're familiar with Catholic structure, kind of like a DOC. So the guy right underneath the head was one of the people speaking, and yeah, I sat next to him. I got to have a really fun conversation with him, but more on that later. So I was...
This is not the hour-long
version. No, I was okay. A fifth-generation Adventist, and but before I was about 4 years before I was born, my mom had Hodgkin's lymphoma. And she went through the treatments. It's even then it was a very treatable form of cancer, but there hadn't been all that many successes yet. And they were seriously overtreating. So by the time she got done, she was told that she would be sterile and that if she were to somehow manage to get pregnant, that she would. If it even came out alive, would be, yeah, we're here.
Okay, you cut out for a minute.
Oh, sorry. She was told that if she did happen to get pregnant, she'd need to get an abortion because the chance of complications, stillbirth, or deformities would be way too high. And she got pregnant a couple of years later, and she hid that fact. The Adventists aren't, they are pro-life, but they are also pro-choice to an extent. And the church, if they had known she was pregnant, given her medical history, they would have even all pushed her towards getting an abortion. And she did not want to do that. She believed it was a gift from God. And I was born perfectly healthy and normal and being told that I was a miracle my entire life.
Miracle baby!
So I then, starting in third grade, went to Adventist schools. And by my senior year of high school, this was at an Adventist boarding school, I started feeling a sense of calling. One of the things that had prompted that was September 11, when the planes were flown into the World Trade Center. I was on the third day of senior survival. This is a Seventh-day Adventist apocalyptic survival school that academy seniors or high school seniors go through. And
it's as crazy as it sounds.
We were, it is even crazier than that, because one of the courses we had to do with it was spiritual survival. We're reading books, or at least excerpts from one of the books of Ellen White, who was the prophetess of the Adventist Church in the 19th and early 20th century. And we were reading that day through sections about how easy in the end of times it will be for people to be deceived. And then the pastor who was leading this had the audacity, when he found out the news midway through, to pose it as a hypothetical. What if I told you that terrorists had taken over a plane? And then he said, and it happened. None of us believed him. He spent the next hour trying to convince us. The principal joined in trying to convince us. There were three or four of us that still didn't believe it until we actually heard it on the radio.
Wow.
Those of us who had a hard time buying it after he had used such a devious way to tell us, we're all atheists now.
I got to stop you there in the story and ask, survival school, you've got to tell me more about this. This sounds amazing.
So we were taught...
foraging for berries.
We were taught how to forage for berries, roots, how to trap animals. Even though Adventists encourage vegetarianism, when you're in a survival situation, you can realistically only survive for a few days on what you can forage. So if you're going to be out there long term, like when you're running from the government that's trying to hunt you down because you won't go to church on Sunday, then you're going to have to hunt some rodents and eat them. We learned about how to build structures and, you know, we learned everything you would need to know to survive in the hills of Southern Oregon while being hunted by the government.
Sounds like every libertarian's either fantasy or nightmare. I'm not sure which, and it might actually be the same thing.
It is.
He was very prepared for Red Dawn.
Yeah, yeah. And Adventists do believe that during the time of trouble after... the time of trouble will start right before the close of probation. That final, the shit's about to hit the fan, so it's time to repent and come back to God. And with the time of trouble, there will be a national Sunday law passed. So everybody will be required to go to church on Sunday. And shortly after that, then they're required to get the mark of the beast on their hand or their forehead. And without that, they can't buy or sell. RFID chips, most likely, at this point. Uh-huh. Earlier, they were saying it was credit cards.
We're lucky that one is so specific about the Sunday law, because mm-hmm. if it weren't for that, then everybody would think it was the apocalypse.
Now, the time of trouble, there's the first time of trouble, and then there's the time of Jacob's trouble. That first time of trouble is up until the passage of the International Sunday Law, where at this point, they all think the UN will get every country in the world to sign up on this, which would include the Muslim world.
I'm sure they're big fans of that idea.
Yeah.
You might start noticing a rather anti-Catholic tone.
Oh, yes. And this will be all brought about by a merging of church and state between the Pope and the U.S. presidency.
And when do the people with scorpion heads come in?
That's kind of in the time of Jacob's Lizard trouble. People. So after the International Sunday Law is passed, that's the sign that probation has closed. Everyone who is saved is saved, and everyone who is lost is lost. And God pulls his grace away from the earth, and all hell breaks loose, and it's just mass pandemonium and chaos as people start slaughtering each other, and they're hunting down the true believers, and you get shot on the site, and it's a pretty grotesque version of how things are supposed to last for probably years.
Fantastic. I'm surprised that the movies that have been turned into that plot have not gotten bigger, but at least it's given no illusions some material. So So after
so many good movies.
Oh, indeed. So, okay, so after you learned about the Scorpion helmets that took over 9/11 and plunged a bunch of planes into buildings, supposedly they probably didn't hit the Pentagon because, you know, conspiracy. But so after you got that and you realized it was real, that was that when you heard the calling, or had you already heard the calling?
It was a couple weeks later where we had a week of prayer on campus, and while the pastor was up there preaching, I kept having these thoughts in my head that it should be me. And I kept fighting those thoughts. I was like, no, I'm going to go into the military. I was applying for Air Force ROTC scholarship, and these thoughts kept coming back. By March, we went on our, for spring break, we did a mission trip, and down in Mexico, I got bit by a poisonous spider.
Oof.
Picked up a really nasty infection, almost lost my toe. Wasn't able to work at my job on campus at a lumber mill. So, and I also wasn't taking very many classes. It was the end of my senior year.
Campus job working a lumber mill. That is messed up.
I was 17 working in a lumber mill. Yeah. And I was reading a lot of the Bible in my free time. And I started having this sense that God was punishing me for resisting the sense of calling, that the poisonous spider bite and infection was the same as, or similar to Jacob fighting with the angel and Paul being struck with blindness on the road to Damascus, and that God had a special plan for me for the end days, and that I needed to stop fighting that. Then I got the letter offering me an Air Force ROTC scholarship. That had been my dream for many, many years, and I had the offer. But I didn't like the school that I could have taken that at. I did like the Adventist school that I checked out because it felt comfortable and like home. And I got on my knees and I asked God what to do. And the answer I heard in my head was, go to Walla Walla, take theology. So I turned down the ROTC scholarship, enrolled in Walla Walla College. It's an Adventist university in the Northwest. And declared myself a theology major, earned my Bachelor of Arts in Theology. By the end of my freshman year, I started having a lot of doubts about pretty much every aspect of the Christian message. I kept finding ways to shut up those doubts and even convinced myself throughout the process that these doubts were making my faith stronger because I was getting rid of the childish faith and replacing it with a more mature adult faith. And I got to my senior year, I was trying to get hired as a pastor with the Adventist Church. I was all but promised a job by the Oregon Conference, and then they didn't call me, which goes back to that 100th anniversary celebration for the church that my great-great-grandparents started. I got to sit next to the Oregon Conference vice president, the very person who had virtually promised me a job, and I got to stop him after the service and say, what happened? And put him in a very, very awkward, uncomfortable conversation that fortunately he indulged me for about 10 minutes. But, oh, man, he did not want to talk to me right then.
No, but thinking about it, I figured it out. I think God is some kind of banker. And he wanted you to go to school and so he could rake in on the student loan interest.
Yep.
Oh, man, he works for the government, too. It's all a conspiracy. I knew it.
So I got my Bachelor of Arts in Theology, minors in History and Biblical Languages. I was not hired on as a pastor yet. So I went ahead and I went on to the Seventh-day Adventist Theological Seminary to work on my Master of Divinity. I came very close that summer to not going. My doubts had gotten to the point where I would have most accurately been described as an agnostic at that point. An agnostic theist. I wasn't sure if there was a God, but I really, really wanted to believe. And I got to the seminary and I was able to take classes that dealt specifically with the very topics that I struggled with. And in each of those classes, the answer I found was, this is bullshit.
And now you know the secret to higher education and religion.
And I came so close to quitting at the end of the first semester, but decided not to because of the fact that I'd be driving from Michigan back to Oregon in December.
Oh, yeah, that'll talk anybody out of doing anything.
So I decided I can handle another semester. So I continued on through the next semester. About halfway through, I was convinced that it was time to quit. I was even at that, I managed to write about 45 pages of a deistic or kind of deistic alternative theology. And I was just trying to get all of these thoughts out of my head. And yeah, I ended up taking 45 pages to do it. My roommate ended up convincing me not to quit because of that sense of calling. I wasn't ready to just accept that it was all complete delusions in my head. And I decided I needed to get out of the classroom. So I signed up for 2 trips that summer. One was a 6-week archaeological dig in Jordan, and the other was a 3-week evangelistic series in Mexico. And I went to Jordan. I got to see a lot of sites where the Bible stories were from. And my conclusion there was, this is a tiny, insignificant place, and nothing important could have possibly happened here. I went to Jerusalem and walked the Via Della Rosa, and I felt nothing. I watched the sunset from the Mount of Olives, and I felt nothing. That was Jerusalem. I'd kind of considered my last-ditch effort to try to regain some kind of sense of faith. I prayed at the Wailing Wall. I tried everything there. Nothing. I came very close while I was in Jordan to canceling the Mexico trip, but decided against it and decided that was going to be my last chance. So I got to Mexico, and I got out to my church site where I was going to be preaching. I preached 4 sermons, and the 4th one was supposed to be an altar call, which I did do, and nobody came forward. Even worse was I preached 4 sermons where I didn't believe a single word that came out of my mouth. I'd only done that one time before, and I'd promised to myself I'd never do it again, and it was destroying me. So after the 4th one, I couldn't sleep that night. I was just torn in my thoughts, and I realized that if I was right and that Christianity was bullshit, then by preaching, I wasn't doing anyone any good. And if I was wrong, the fact that nobody came forward for the altar call proved that I wouldn't have been doing anybody any good in that scenario either. So I quit. We had a sponsor from the seminary and from another organization that was sponsoring the trip. I talked to them for about an hour, and I started off with, I can't continue because I am not a Christian anymore. By the end of the hour, they wished me the best and thanked me for my integrity.
So I have to ask one question, though. You were in Jordan and thought, man, this is an insignificant part of the world where nothing ever happens, and yet you ended up in Idaho. Explain.
Okay, so after I dropped out of the seminary, I had to find work, and I found an entry-level management position that started out in Tacoma, Washington. The company then asked me to move to Everett, Washington, so I moved. They then asked me to move to Boise, so I moved.
Then and you've been stuck here ever since.
Then they fired me.
Oh, goodness.
And so I've been stuck here, yeah.
And stranded him in Boise, Idaho.
That's cruel. I mean,
it's not the Midwest.
There are far worse places to be. I honestly could survive living in Idaho the rest of my life if I had to, like, just being in Michigan was depressing. The fact that you look up and there's nothing above the trees is horribly depressing for me. It's like this weird ultra agoraphobia where if you grow up in the West and you look up and you see mountains and you're in a place where you look up and you don't see mountains, something is wrong. Even in Tacoma, it was cloudy most of the time, but when the clouds would break, you'd look up and there was Mount Rainier in all of its almost 15,000 feet of glory. was just spectacular. Now, Boise doesn't have mountains like that, but we do have the foothills, and they are still pretty and nice to look at.
When they're not burning up.
Yeah. When they aren't on fire.
That actually puts a part of my life into some perspective, because my ex-girlfriend, that one that was from Boise, always complained, you know, there's no mountains around here. I want to go to the mountains. And my dumb ass would be like, but there's mountains right here, the Appalachians. And she would say, those are hills.
Those are, mm-hmm. They're glorious hills, but they are hills.
Yeah, I've been through
she yearned for the Rocky Mountains.
I've been through the Appalachians, and they remind me of the Boise foothills.
Really? Oh, I always thought that they were way bigger than that.
They're maybe a little closer to the Siskiyous around Grants Pass, but...
okay. Well, now I'm disappointed. Now I have no reason to go to the east.
No, there really isn't. DC's cool.
As long as you don't have to drive there.
Fly in, fly out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. I had to make an unexpected trip to Florida recently, and I had to drive around DC at rush hour, and I think I would rather stab myself in the eyes with a vinegar knife than ever drive around DC ever again.
Now, for us...
Sorry about the dogs there. They went crazy.
Driving to D.C. for us would be two and a half days of driving through flat... Oh, so flat. I want to blow my brains out flat.
Well, you know, it may be blow your brains out flat, but I found that most of the major interstates are like that. My drive was from southern Pennsylvania to Tampa, Florida... And after you got past DC, it got to the point where I like to call it the 600 miles of nothing but trees. And that's why General Sherman burned it, because he was bored and wanted to see something interesting. So that's my historical explanation, because when you feel like you've been on the road for 6 hours and you look up and there's still, you know, 300 miles to go and you've seen nothing but trees, I can understand wanting to set some shit on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, that is highly plausible. Now back to me leaving. I preach, of course. I preach probably 25, 30 times, plus various shorter like worship talks or kind of more motivational type talks. And with that, you know, the whole once a preacher, always a preacher thing is definitely true.
Which is why he's just said, and back to me.
Yeah. And so when I quit all of that, I took a couple of years. Okay, effectively, it was until my grandparents had died. And then I had this uncontrollable urge to get my thoughts out in the open. And so that was when I started blogging and then podcasting. And I found speaking into a microphone is a very comfortable place for me to be.
Now, so you went from miracle... to hearing the call and thinking 9/11 was not happening, to trying it and not liking it because Jordan was boring, and then you went to speaking into a microphone. And that's a really interesting journey, and I also think it speaks against a lot of the cliches that, at least out here, we typically hear from Christians, which is atheists don't know the Bible and they're just angry at God and we should write God's not dead because that'll show them. So what was your experience? Besides, I know you said the 1 hour thanks for your integrity thing, but how did some of the other people that you knew and had established relationships with act towards your decision?
They were the few that I talked to were cool. I got back to Michigan and it was still summer.
Yeah, I think you're also missing here that he was only halfway through the evangelistic series when this all happened. He got to live the rest of that trip out in Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, I fantastic. Stayed the rest of the time in Cancun. I continued to share the room with the same person I'd been sharing the room with while I was preaching. And I would watch the rest of the group go out to their churches to preach while I was catching a bus to go to the hotel zone and get shit-faced. And everybody was cool. One of my old teachers from high school was there. He was cool. Some people I'd known from Grants Pass were there. They were cool. Everybody was really cool with it. My roommate was one of the people that I talked to. The roommate there I had in Michigan, or in Mexico. I talked to him for probably 2 hours that morning that I quit. And by the end of it, he was convinced that me quitting and leaving Christianity was the right thing to do. And he was already had the title of pastor. He was just getting his master's degree at that point. And when I got back to Michigan and I met up with a few friends and I told them, they were all really cool about it. And then I moved 2,500 miles away.
I think a part of that, why it was so cool and relatively, was I bet it would have been different if you were an undergrad. I think that you reach a certain acceptance of people leaving the church when you go into a master's. It's like if you study it enough, you're going to realize that people are going to drop out. They're going to study themselves out of the...
If it happened at the end of my undergrad, I think people would have been relatively cool with it.
Okay.
It was probably 8 months later, I got an email from one of my professors from college, from the theology department at Walla Walla. Actually, a couple of them emailed me, and they were trying to understand where I was at and how I'd gotten there, and they were disappointed, but all stayed really pretty cool. I'm friends with a lot of those professors on Facebook right now.
Well, you had built up an intellectual friendship mm-hmm. versus a purely religious one.
My mom, when I got back home after I dropped out, she waited a while before she sat me down for that conversation I'd been dreading. And we had that chat, and it lasted probably about an hour and a half. She... at one point was blaming it all on the debt I was going into, said it was all about money and it was a delayed teenage rebellion. At which point I told her, Mom, I graduated cum laude with a Bachelor of Arts in Theology and I've done 3 semesters in the seminary. And you think this is a teenage rebellion? I know your religion better than you do. I got up and I walked away.
Wow.
And we didn't talk about anything even remotely about religion for probably about a year and a half when it would have been about the time I was going on to Chariots of Iron, and I dropped the atheist word just in passing, and it didn't even faze my parents. Since then, when my parents have had to navigate a little bit of church politics, my mom will call me up and ask me about for some advice on how to do it, since I've actually studied how church politics goes, and I've been able to advise her. And what's so weird with it is when you don't have a dog in that fight, it's so easy to be objective and just dispassionately say, okay, here's what's going on. Here's what they're doing. Here's how you can get your point across. I think they're all wrong. But because I think everybody is wrong, it was actually really easy to give her advice on that.
It's just so interesting to hear your story with pretty much no resistance on the part of your peers, especially because our guest on the previous episode was a Mormon who left the church, and you know, she wasn't allowed to go to her own sister's wedding, and you know, she ended up having a pagan Celtic hand fasting wedding. And even there, her parents insisted on doing a Christian prayer for the blessing. And it just seemed so out of place. You know,
Mormonism is a shame cult. They will shame you out of, I grew up in Mormonville. So it's just that you lose your entire society when you leave the church. And man, they'll bring it up every chance they can to remind you of it. Weddings are held at the temple where unless you're a believer, you can't go in. And exclusionary practices are consistent.
And with what my experience with Adventists was, well, for one, my friends were fellow academics. So they knew me. In most cases, I think they knew I was smarter than them, and they knew they couldn't beat me in an argument. So there wasn't any point in arguing it, but Adventists are actually very, They tend to be very heady and intellectual the way they handle things. They're young Earth creationists and believe a lot of bullshit, but they go with a very intellectual approach to their bullshit.
Huh.
Yeah.
That makes sense and is confusing all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's religion.
Indeed.
They are the most gullible skeptics you will ever meet.
Oh, that's really fascinating. I don't know if there are any Adventists out here, so I'm not as familiar with that as some of the other sects. So it's really interesting. What's that? Well, we're in central Pennsylvania. I mean, I'm sure there's some here, but I can't say I've ever met one.
One of my high school teachers went to Pennsylvania to be the principal for one of the Adventist academies in Pennsylvania.
So they're here.
Oh yeah, there's thousands of them around you. There's a decent chance that your doctor or a doctor you might run into in a hospital or your dentist is one, because a lot of Adventists go into medicine.
Interesting.
See, the Adventist Church has its own medical and dental school.
Learning something new every day, the world of podcasting. So speaking of that, you were talking about getting interested in speaking into a microphone, which is, of course, its own form of preaching and evangelism on a certain level. So did having that experience sort of make it a seamless transition for you?
I wouldn't say seamless, but it made it natural. When you're preaching in a church, you are... Now, you've got a microphone there, either on the pulpit or clipped onto your tie. And so I was already comfortable with microphones. I was already comfortable with crowds, you know, in the few hundreds to, in the largest case, I had briefly, like for a couple minutes, had an audience in about the 3,000 person range. So going onto a podcast and speaking to a microphone, it was, the only difference was you can't see your audience. It's a little bit weird when you're used to speaking to an audience, but I've adapted. But yeah, the hardest part has been the fact that you're just speaking out into the ether.
I can totally appreciate that. I mean, even in some of the previous pursuits before this podcast, it was always something that was either pre-recorded or not something that there was a lot of live interaction. So I imagine when you have people yelling out things like it's a Donald Trump rally, you know, you can sort of get used to the noise, so to speak.
Well, you learn to gauge it and feed off of it. It's a lot harder when you're getting numbers, you know, a week after the podcast is released to see if anybody's even downloaded it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas so, when you're preaching in front of a live audience, you've got, you can see, and especially after when you've preached there before, you start to figure out who are the people you can really gauge how the message is coming across, and you figure out which ones are going to fall asleep no matter what, which ones are going to fall asleep if you're getting too boring, and which ones are going to give you really good visual feedback, and that's really powerful having that. It can really change how you do present your message based on how people are responding when you can see their faces.
It's good prep for politics.
Definitely.
So I heard you mention Chariots of Iron, and I'm assuming that's a former work that you did before the Atheist Nomads. So you started speaking into a microphone. How did you get there? And can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Okay, so Chariots of Iron had been around since, I think they started 2008 or 2007. They went defunct in 2012, and they were the second podcast I ever listened to, and I was immediately hooked and went back through their entire back catalog. And when I started listening, they'd actually just recently done an episode where they talked about a pamphlet one of them had come across from the Adventist Church, and they had some questions about it. So I sent them an email with like a 2-page explanation of what they were questioning. And they were like, holy shit, we need to get this guy on. I also told a little bit of my background, and for about a year, that email was printed out, pinned to the wall next to Eli's computer. And it took about a year. By that point, I'd actually met them in person. That happened to be down in Portland, where they were based out of, when they were doing a little meet and greet. And shortly after that, they went ahead and had me on as a guest. And I had so much in notes prepared to talk about my story in the Adventist Church that they brought me on two more times as a guest. And then after that, Eli's daughter had some health issues, so he was out for a while, and I got brought in a couple times to fill in for him. And then Lamar was out a couple times, and I was brought in a few times to help out with fill in for him. And I kept upgrading audio equipment to try to get a little bit better sound. And then when they stopped doing the show, I was like, okay, it's time to fill that hole that I now have in my podcast subscription list.
Yeah, I mean, I can appreciate where you're coming from. It was a very similar experience for me, at least in getting introduced to podcasts. I've told the story before, but I went in about 6 months from not knowing that skeptic podcasting was a thing to having about 30 subscriptions and having most of them on my show. So, you know, I was late to the party, but I made up for it with effort. So hopefully that counts for something.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now, when you mention Eli, I can't help but think of Eli Bosnick, and I'm sure that's not the same one, but
different Eli.
You know, you mentioned that was your second podcast. So what are some of the other podcasts that got you interested, and, you know, what were some of your influences from that perspective?
Oh, man, the early ones would have been Chariots of Iron and Atheist News, both of which have gone defunct. Evolution 101 from Dr. Zachary Moore, as well as his Apologia podcast. Those have also gone defunct. Skeptic's Guide to the Universe was one of the next few that came up. Living After Faith with Rich and Deanna Joy Lyons. That podcast has also stopped. So most of the ones that got me going are no longer going.
So you're saying your miracle-ness subconsciously killed them because, of course, you know, you heard the calling and it was a subconscious desire to silence the skeptic voices. Is that right? Or
no, I would go a lot more with life happens, and there was not a good way for podcasters to get any kind of money coming in at that time. So it was costing them money to put in a lot of time. And when depression gets worse, or a baby is born, or a kid is having health problems, it is very easy for the microphone to get shut off. And that's what happened with each of those.
Yeah. So here in the new age of podcasting, we've gone from not having easy ways to make money to harassing people about Patreon until they shut up and pay it. So we at least have something, although we have to evangelize in a different way, patreon.com/incitingincident. And I am a patron of Atheist Nomads too. So you should be as well. So Lauren, I want to get you in there too. Were you into podcasting before you were asked to be on the show, or was it sort of a trial by fire going with what you had learned from Dustin?
I had never listened to a podcast. I didn't know podcasting existed, honestly.
You had it in the car by that point.
Not really.
But not many.
But now I really do enjoy Star Talk, Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, Radio versus the Martians. I like a little bit more geek culture than Dustin does. He's more serious. So if it's going to be about comics or movies or stuff like that, I'm a little bit more interested, like the pop culture stuff. But I had no idea that there was this thing, this internet radio that people had. And it's really cool. It's really cool. I'm not as into it as some. But that's okay. As long as it keeps paying for itself, then it doesn't bother me any.
Absolutely. You know, we started as a film podcast, but people kept asking our opinions on current events, because when you're talking about film analysis, you can't help but do so because it influences so much of what ends up in movies. And then we just sort of turned into a current events podcast that sometimes talks about film and media. So it was an interesting transition.
Wow.
Well, I guess there was a niche that needed to be filled and you were naturally kind of drawn mm-hmm. to that side.
Whereas we just started a new project, Lauren and I, with Sci-Fi Nomads.
Sci-Fi Nomads!
You can find it at sci-fi-nomads.com or on iTunes or Google Play. And we only have one real episode up so far. Next one will be coming out in probably 2 weeks. It's only going to be monthly, but we're doing sci-fi.
That's great.
We're watching all the Terminator series, Aliens. We got Firefly on the docket. It's going to be awesome.
Isn't it great when you get to do nerdy stuff and get paid for it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I keep telling you that what we need to do is be able to write off conventions as a business expense and send me to Salt Lake Comic Con, Emerald City Comic Con.
For business.
Naturally. I'd be handing out the swag.
Yeah. Tax write-off for Nomad Studio Productions.
Yay.
I'm surrounded by that kind of nerdery all the time. And I've explained this on the show to other people several times, but I'll, reiterate it here, that I am always surrounded by subcultures that I'm not into, but like the people who are. So I have this weird sort of dichotomy where I go to anime conventions despite not giving a shit about anime. And I end up, performing with the improv people and doing panels as the film guy. But as soon as they start asking anime questions, it, just sort of makes my head spin. Even on the last episode, my more like you, Lauren, more into the comics and games and stuff. They were talking about something involving Warcraft, and I sort of spaced out and probably fell asleep on the podcast at one point. But
but there's a movie now.
Right. And sort of like Dustin, got out of religion by going to school for it. I am in my senior year of a film degree, and there has not been a movie in 2 years that I actually wanted to see. And I think it's for the same reason, because I felt a calling that was, God, every movie that comes out sucks and I don't care anymore.
Yeah, you've educated yourself out of caring.
Yeah, I really have. I mean,
and that happens to most people who get degrees. It's just, you have a degree now, so you better just keep it up. And that's when people get these crazy 45, 50-year-old crazy, I gotta leave my career and do something different moments.
Yep.
So, Lauren, what did you get educated out of?
Math. I wasn't diagnosed until just recently, but I had ADD all growing up. Well, not all growing up, recently, since like 18. Has something to do with probably my depression medications, but or the anxiety stuff. I don't know. Either way, it made studying very hard, very difficult. And so no matter what I went into, whether it was international business or graphic design or biology, I could never maintain enough of the willpower to actually get through classes. It's just too bad, but I gave it my I gave it the old college try, which is actually a really weird saying now that I think about it. It actually fits my life perfectly. But I self-studied in medical coding. So now I'm a medical coder, and our dog is misbehaving again.
I was trying to distract him, and unfortunately that did not work out well.
Made things worse. But so now I just do like all the science stuff on my own. I am going to be giving a talk here in September to the Native Plant Society about carnivorous plants, because I've become a huge person on carnivorous plants. I'm now the local expert, as my friend at the Nature Center likes to call me. And all just on my free time, of my own free will. It's really fun to get into stuff like that.
Well, I assume that includes like Venus flytraps and things like that, or are there ones that are people sized that Gwar uses to consume, you know, people who work at a record store?
No, those are Amorphophallus titum, and they are not from around here. That's the corpse flower, which is wicked metal, by the way. Nice. But no, I tend to focus on the native plants, so the ones that just grow in Idaho or the Pacific Northwest.
And they're tiny.
And they're so tiny, and I have little babies, and I'm also making a coloring book and educational brochures. Also, I got a grant for it. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, I got $1,000 to make all sorts of educational materials. So
that's phenomenal.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Too bad I can't just write myself a salary off of it, but
well, you know, progress.
It paid for a couple camping trips.
There you go. Silver linings everywhere.
Yes.
So now that we've gotten up to the present, you guys are about 160 episodes in and going strong. You know, I've been listening since Eli guest starred on the most recent time. That's how I got into it. You know, like I said, my sister introduced me to Scathing, and then from there I got to all three of their podcasts, and then I started looking up the guests, and then I started looking up where they had guested on, and that's how I found you guys. So similar to us, I think you guys look at a lot of the current events and things that are going on in the news, and I'm curious if anything recently has stood out to you in the mass of absurdity that is our common culture right now.
Oh, wow. Donald Trump.
He's a punchline now.
It's a punchline. You don't need to say any more. Just Donald Trump.
Everything about him is, oh, man. How is our country sunk so low that he is the nominee for a presidential, a major political party? It's absolutely mind-boggling.
It's pretty bad. I really like everything that the Church of Satan is doing.
They're the greatest trolls ever.
Including the after-school programs, which I actually like. Oh my God, I wish those were around 15 years ago when I was in high school, because right? I actually got put on the suicide watch list because of my studies into Lucifer. I'm like, wait a second, Lucifer's just this angel who thought that he had his own, you know, that, you know, he was better than, you know, the whole story. And the librarian was like,
you there? Did we lose you again? Hello? Oh no. The librarian was like, and then Lucifer hit, and now I can't hear anything. Oh dear.
Inciting Incident couldn't keep bringing you commentary, interviews, and fantastic guests without help from you, the patrons. You can support the podcast on a monthly basis at patreon.com/incitingincident, which gives you access to many great rewards, including a free t-shirt if you pledge $5 or more. You can also support the show by subscribing, rating, reviewing, and commenting. To contact them about ideas, guests, disagreements, fisticuffs, salmon slapping, rebel rousing, or just plain old tomfoolery, you can email them at incitingincidentpodcast@gmail.com. On Facebook, at facebook.com/incitingincidentpodcast. Or yell into a tin cup and hope it's connected to one of our aforementioned string networks. And now, back to the show.
See? That's what studying Lucifer in the library does to you. The librarian says be quiet, and they completely cut you off. That is why you do not study with the Church of Satan at the Breakfast Club. John Bender was the real Lucifer, and he told us that if he gets up, we all get up. It'll be anarchy. Oh, dear, and they've left me all alone with a microphone. Hopefully they come back here, because now I'm just talking to myself about the Church of Satan, Lucifer, and John Bender from the Breakfast Club. They're great. Hello, darkness, my old friend. I really wish that song had not been covered. McConnelling was the greatest thing that ever happened. Once again, this is why you shouldn't study with the Church of Satan, because when I get left alone, you get to hear all the shit that's in my head that doesn't make the show. While I'm listening to them talk about miracles and going to Jordan, I'm sitting here thinking, I wonder why all those Facebook posts say, what are you going to do? Would you punch your roommate in the face for $3 million? Is there just some kind of philanthropist who goes around inviting people to do the most absurd things? And then they just, you know, hey, that looks like a reasonable minded individual. And I have $3 million to spare. Maybe I should give him $3 million, but he's got to earn it. How is he going to earn it? I know. Can he give up Facebook for 3 months? Can he punch his roommate in the face? Would he drive to school naked? Here's $3 million. Thank you. Would you like a piece of pie? I don't know. I don't think I have that sense of imagination that it requires. I tend to take everything literally, which has made me gullible, but it also makes me really annoyed with 80% of the things that are posted on Facebook. And despite disagreeing with Jim Florentine politically, that's why I love awful Facebook posts, especially on his podcast, Comedy Metal Midgets, because him just sitting there and going, you know, what? Somebody's going to give you $3 million. Really? You think that's going to happen? Oh, here's another post. I wish all of the extra fat I had would melt off and turn into cash. That's never happened. That's never going to happen. And it's fucking stupid. Just heard from Dustin. There's been some kind of freeze on the laptop. See, it was Lucifer. God damn it. Huh. That was some ironic blasphemy. Apparently their laptop froze, and if it wasn't Lucifer, it was probably Mr. Freeze. He's made a habit of not only being a philanthropist, but coming on and making everything interesting here. Oh, I think we're getting him back on, although he's muted. Still on the mute. And it's a different picture now. I've been staring at that atheist tattoo for the last 45 minutes. Now I've got to look at a new visual. But I still see the mute. Can I unmute him? Apparently not. Nope, he dropped again. They've left me alone here. I don't know what to do. It's very scary. And it's dark. And nobody said cookies. There he is. Do we got it? You know, you think this was a joke when we talk about this being the Technical Difficulties podcast? It's not! Inciting Incident, the Technical Difficulties podcast, is brought to you by patreon.com/incitingincident, where you get all your current events and media discussion at the most expending audio technicality problems that you could possibly have. And it's phenomenal. We've switched servers, we've switched microphones, we've switched recording, we've switched everything. And still, Google Hangouts does not like Librarian Satan. You should not research those things, especially in Mormonville. You know, Eliza taught us that. If you study things in Mormonville, you end up getting a pagan wedding and coming on our show. And that's punishment that's worse than being expelled from the temple. Let's face it. Right now, I'm just looking at the audio circles surrounding my logo. Because that's what you do when you're in a Google Hangouts recording and you're the only person there. I'm looking at the wedding suit that I'll be wearing in 10 days. Somebody married me or is going to. Ah, I see the tattoo again. Maybe this is right.
Okay. Now you should hear me.
Wow. There you are. I've been vamping for 10 minutes.
sorry about that. I had a heart BIOS freeze.
I don't know what that means, but I'll take your word for it. I was convinced that the librarian Lucifer froze everything and didn't want anybody to say what happened.
Oh, damn. Lauren actually left us when the crash happened because she's not feeling well. So, we'd actually gone ahead and moved on to a different topic by that point. But yeah, the librarian got her in trouble and put on suicide watch.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Did she leave?
Yes, she did leave. She's not feeling well.
Wow. We sort of transitioned there, didn't we?
Yes. The other big issue we've got going on here is faith healing, where these parents are, as long as they only treat their child with prayer alone, they are completely immune to any kind of potential legal issues. So it's considered to be on par with providing your kid actual treatment, medical treatment and care. So they're completely immune. And we had a survivor of that group on who's actually been lobbying the state government for a couple of years now on this issue. We had her on the show about a year and a half ago. And there's some other people now involved with the lobbying effort. And the governor actually ordered the state legislature, which is they're done with their session for the year, to have a special committee that is doing hearings on this very issue right now. And they had one of the leaders from this group who went before them and said, medicine is witchcraft, it's from Satan, and that if they're ordered by the state to provide their children medical care, they will not comply.
Wow. That's unreal. I mean, I know the vaccination thing has been sort of a hot button topic in the last couple of years, but the whole total faith healing has only been brought up when, you know, the skeptic news people have brought it up. You don't hear it a lot otherwise.
Well, Oregon, it was only, what, about 3 or 4, it's probably closer to 5 years ago would be when Oregon cracked down their laws so that parents are required to give their children actual medical treatment or else they are liable for manslaughter if the kid dies. And the same group, Followers of Christ, that we have a rather large group here in Idaho, the way they've handled it is by creating forms that their members will fax to the state or to the county child welfare people, who that way they're notified that they can come and take the kid and get the kid medical care. And the parents don't have to actually violate their faith. They are just notifying the state because they have to. The ones who weren't happy with that in Oregon have joined their brethren in Idaho, and this is a group where once they have a child die, their ticket to heaven is punched. So they can do anything, including get medical care themselves when they're old.
Whew. That's heavy.
Yeah. And so this guy that told this legislative committee that he will defy the law if they change it, he's had 5 children. 3 made it to adulthood.
Ooh.
The other 2 died.
That's terrifying.
He's got a 60% survival rate for children born into his home. I've been to one of this church's cemeteries, and you walk around, and most of the graves look like they're from the wrong century. You see 2004 for kids that only made it 6 days.
Oh, man.
You've got,
in just the last 2 years, two kids have died. In the couple of years prior to that, actually, no, I think it was in the last year, two children from this group alone died. In the last handful of years, six kids died. Linda Martin, who's been working on this the longest, she's the one who escaped that group as soon as she reached adulthood. She knows personally of at least 180 children who have died since about 1980 in this church of a couple hundred.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And that's happening out that you, in Oregon, you said, right?
It was happening in Oregon. It is continuing to happen in Idaho.
And is the general population, like the local people, aware of this? Or is this just something that flies under the radar because religion?
It's been in the local news. Like, there's been exposés in the local news, both newspapers and TV news covering this. It has been brought to people's opinion or to public knowledge. And there are members of the state legislature who their position on it is parental rights. You cannot do anything to counter parental rights, and you can't do anything to limit their freedom of religion. And they keep getting reelected. And when you look at people in Idaho, if you say freedom of religion or you say parents' rights, then they don't want it happening. Or they're actually, let me rephrase that. They're okay with it happening.
Wow. I mean, I feel repetitive, keep saying wow, but that's ridiculous. I mean, that's basically sanctioning child murder.
Children are dying because their parents aren't giving them access to antibiotics and insulin.
Stuff that's easily available in this country. I mean,
and has been for 100 years.
I don't know. What's that?
And it's actually even worse than that. This is a group that doesn't proselytize and they don't allow their members to marry outside of the church. So for the last about 120 years, this small group has been inbreeding with each other. And the rate of birth defects and genetic complications is increasing. So children are dying at what's approaching a higher rate than they were prior to modern medicine.
I got nothing. Like, I'm trying to think of something other than my disgust and surprise to say, but I got nothing on that one. I mean, maybe it's because I wasn't raised with any serious religion that I don't understand that mindset. And, you know, I don't live out there, so I don't confront this level of fundamentalism, but wow.
Yeah. Well, the church I was raised in has a bunch of doctors. It has its own medical school. My mom was a nurse. So the thought that people would reject medicine, I was familiar with very conservative Adventists rejecting basically everything else in society, but not medicine. And the fact that these people are proud when their children die is absolutely horrifying.
The fact that it's legal is horrifying. Like, that there's no repercussion because religion, like, you know, I'm not as fire breathing as some of the other atheist podcasters, but at the same time, when children are dying because of straight up negligence, if it was under any other circumstance, it would be national news, like that guy who kept three people in his basement in Cleveland for 3 years. I mean, yeah. What the fuck?
Oh, if these parents weren't feeding their children because they were strung out on meth all the time, the state would be there doing something about it instantly. But all they have to say is faith alone. And what's actually even worse is if one of these parents decides to buck the faith, take the kid to the doctor, and the kid dies, then they're responsible. Because they're only protected if they rely on faith alone.
What in the absolute fuck?
It's all Richard Nixon, actually.
That's a good person to blame, but why?
prior to the Nixon administration, most states had laws that required basic medical care for children and did not have exemptions for faith healing. But Richard Nixon had a Christian Scientist in his administration who got him to tie child support enforcement and welfare money for children's programs to states enacting laws that created religious shields for medical neglect. And they got medical neglect or medical or excuse me, religious shield laws in place to varying degrees in all 50 states within just a couple years. And since then, a lot of states have been slowly removing certain provisions or all of it. Oregon has gone further than most in going from a complete license to murder your children to it's all manslaughter if you do. But in states like Idaho, once it's on the books, it's really hard to get it off.
Our system in a frickin' nutshell. So as much as I would love to delve more into that topic, despite how depressing it is, we're about out of time. But before I ask you the last question here, if people wanted to follow you, Lauren, and your show, how would they do that?
Go to atheistnomads.com. You can also find us in iTunes, Stitcher, Google News. We have apps in both the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store. And yeah, look for us there.
Awesome. And be sure to send me a stinger, you know, an audio opening, just like Wesley did. And his was really good. So if you could send me one that's, you know, hi, this is Dustin from Atheist Nomads, and you're listening to Inciting Incident because, and then whatever you want to say. I hope it's more outrageous and offensive than his was.
Okay. I'll have to go back and listen to his.
Yeah, it's really good. So final question. So we've established that you were a miracle at birth. Mm-hmm. You heard a calling. You were convinced that 9/11 didn't happen. You went to Jordan.
That it was the fulfillment of prophecy.
Right, right. Yeah. And then, you know, you went to Jordan, Mexico, and ended up here. So I got to ask, if there's one thing that you think should be added to that resume that hasn't happened yet, what would it be?
Ooh. Getting to become a full-time professional podcaster.
Excellent. Yeah, I can appreciate that too. I mean, this is the best job ever, and I'm only ashamed that it took so long for me to know about it and know about people like you. And I really want to thank you for coming on the show. Sorry about the technical difficulties there.
Yeah, that was rather disappointing.
Awesome. And hey, if you guys ever need a guest on Atheist Nomads again, you know exactly where to find me.
Alrighty. Well, thank you so much for having us on.
Absolutely. And I hope Lauren feels better very soon. This has been Dustin Williams from Atheist Nomads. And once again, thank you very much for all your time.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Driving up toward Green Bay, the east. The sun's in the rearview mirror. We both had some pretty tough weeks. White knuckles try to steer. A few more miles, there's no telling what we'll find. All we gotta do is take a little time. We all gotta find our own ways to love and hope and breathe again. For some that just happens to be on the shores of Lake Michigan. You can't explain the way a city grips your mind. All we gotta do is take a little time for you and me. Michigan. Waves flow right in and hair rocks and vanish from our sight. Kinda like those troubles that wash away quicker in the moonlight. This crazy old world's got no reason or rhyme. All we gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Little to no chance for all that stormy weather, no. It appears conditions won't get much better for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Sometimes this old world seems much worse than it should be. Couple days later, you're sitting and thinking how lovely. I won't question the scope or design. All I gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan.